I liked what Marilee said yesterday about she feels like she's talking a lot about herself, but she's the person she knows the most about. And so a lot of what I'm going to be telling you today is about our lives, but it's the things that God has shown us through the past. Larry and I have been married 28 years, and the story really almost begins from the day we were married. In Luke 16:11, it says, "If therefore you have been faithful in the use of, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous mammon, who will entrust the true riches to you?" And here God is talking of the mammon is the material things or the things of this world, and the true riches are the spiritual things. So if we're not faithful in the things that God has given us here, He can't entrust these spiritual truths to us. So as God revealed things to us, we tried to begin to build them into our lives. And a lot of the things I'm going to share with you that we did at the beginning were out of ignorance. We didn't know the Bible had anything to say about these areas. So after we got ourselves into the mess I'm going to tell you about, we thought that because we had learned these truths and were going to apply them to our lives, that miraculously this money was going to fall from heaven, we would get out of the mess we were in, and then we would live happily ever after from that point on. But it didn't work that way. Someone asked me yesterday in the midst of this how long it took, so I'll just tell you from the beginning. It took us, well, from the time we really started working our way deep in, it took us about a year. It took us 8 years to get out of the mess. And it was a lot more fun getting in than it was getting out. Hebrews 11:25 talks about the pleasures of sin. And, you know, there's a lot of fun involved in buying and shopping and doing and enjoying yourself. But Galatians 6:7 also says you will reap what you sow. And we did just that. We had sown ourselves into a great financial mess, and the reaping was the pain and the agony and the frustration and the unhappiness and all the things that were involved in getting out of the mess that we had made. When we got married, Larry owned a car. This dates me, but he owned a 57 Chevrolet convertible, black with a red interior. I owned a 56 Chevrolet, a four-door hardtop. I'm from Oklahoma. We moved to New Jersey because he was working on his master's degree. He had a good job. He was working for a company that was paying for his master's degree at New York University. So we moved back there and rented a little three-bedroom furnished apartment. And basically had the money to do what we wanted to do during that first year of marriage. However, by the time we were married, 1 year, we had a daughter. And this little one-bedroom apartment, three rooms, we had a little porta crib, and Kim slept in the room with us, and that was fine. After that year, he changed jobs, and we had to move to Ohio. And when we moved there, we decided that we needed a house. So we rented a little three-bedroom house. And since we had lived in a furnished apartment, we had to go buy furniture. So we go to the furniture store, and we decided we needed a bedroom suit, a dinette suit, and a couch. Those were the most essential things we could think of. So we go in, we pick out the furniture we need, and we start to pay for it, and Larry gets out the checkbook to write the check. And the man says, "Oh, you do not want to pay cash for this." He said, "You're young, you're just married, you've just moved into the community. You need to establish credit." So, you know, we thought, "Oh, that sounded good to us." And, you know, then we didn't have to write this one big check. We could just write a small one every month for the next however many years. So we, you know, followed the way of the world because that's what the world will tell you. And we bought this furniture to pay it out. Kim was sleeping in a little porta crib, so we went to Sears, I think, and bought a larger crib and some furniture for her room. And we thought this was a really neat idea. So we opened a Sears charge account and charged this furniture. And so, you know, just gradually little things like that happened. Before Kim was born, he had the convertible. I had this other car. And we thought, well, if you have a child, you need a station wagon. So we went out and we bought a little station wagon. And we did not have the money to pay cash for that. So we asked his dad if he would co-sign the note with us at that time, not knowing that the Bible had anything to say about co-signing. And I've got some handouts for you here that have a lot of these verses on them. So I'm not going to give you the references right now, but you can look them up later. But there are several verses that talk about co-signing. Because if you co-sign a note with someone and they don't pay it, then you're responsible for it. Now, his father did not get stuck with the bill for the car, but I'm sure there are a lot of cases when this happens. At the time that, when he moved, he was a computer salesman. And for several years, stayed in computer sales. And for those of you who know anything about sales, if you make a sale, you get a commission. And a computer is a fairly expensive piece of equipment, so the commission checks were pretty large. And these would come in periodically as he made sales. And he was doing well, and so we would enjoy, you know, these amounts of money would come in, we'd go out, we'd shop. And if that wasn't enough, then we'd charge it. And so this just became kind of a way of life for us. We moved to Oklahoma in 1969, and he was the branch manager of a computer company here, and decided that he was tired of working for someone else, that he wanted to be his own boss. So he began looking for a business. And I believe he found this business through a newspaper ad. But you know, you've seen the ads, $50,000 and, you know, one, at that time, this was in 1971, and at that time, $50,000, it still is a lot of money, but I mean, it was really a lot of money. And if you made $50,000 a year doing virtually nothing, they said, it was going to be wonderful. So he thought this sounded like a grand idea. Well, the one little catch in all of this was that you had to buy inventory. And the business was that you would call on families and sell them Christian records. And this was wonderful because these families would sit around in the evening listening to these Christian records, and, you know, everyone would you'd have these godly children because they listened to these records. And we thought this sounded really spiritual, that we would have a ministry in the lives of people. He had to spend $5,000 for inventory. Well, we didn't have $5,000 because we had spent all the commission checks on other things. So he went to the bank, and the banker said, "This is a terrible idea." He called his father, and his father said, "This is a terrible idea." But we knew best. So he borrowed the $5,000 plus an additional $1,000 so we would have enough money to live on before all this money started rolling in. Because we were going to make enough in the first month to pay back the loan plus the inventory and the additional money, and that would be no problem. Well, it didn't quite work that way. The albums sold for, I believe they were $46 for six records. We found out later that the market value was about $250 at a garage sale. So we, you know, ended up with all this inventory because people weren't as excited about buying these records as we were about selling them. After about a year of this, he realized that this was not going to work. And some of the verses in this handout talk about getting rich quick, and that is exactly what we were trying to do. We wanted to make this money fast. And basically, Larry thought that he could retire. He loves to play golf, so he thought this would be wonderful. And one thing about this business was that it had to be done in the evening for the most part because you wanted the husband and the wife there. So he was gone a lot in the evening, but he had his days free, so he could play golf. Lori was only about two at the time. So I liked it because he could stay home and keep her, and I could shop, which I did quite well. The other thing that we did during this time was get involved in playing the stock market. His minor for his master's degree was investments, so he thought that he really knew a lot about this. So we had a stockbroker who was a friend of ours from the church we went to, and he would help us. And I don't know how this works, but one, you buy long and you sell short. You buy short, you sell long. One way it has to go up, the other way it has to go down for you to make money. Well, invariably, if we would buy it and it was supposed to go down, it would go up. If it was supposed to go up, it would go down. So we went through quite a bit of money doing that. Before we were married, I worked, and I was very thrifty. I had a $25 savings bond taken out of every paycheck. So he cashed all my savings bonds in and bought this stock. It's a wonderful stock that now is worth about this piece of paper. We still have it. Someday I'm going to have it framed just as a memento of all my hard-earned money. That is just another example of trying to get rich quick. We were just trying to make some money fast. And a lot of people make a lot of money on the stock market. We didn't. After about a year of this, he decided that he was going to have to go back to work. He was driving down 23rd Street in Oklahoma City one day, and he said God just impressed him that he should go to Oklahoma City University and apply for a teaching job. Well, he had a master's degree, but most of the time at a university you need a doctorate, and he had no experience teaching at all. But they hired him to teach in the business department, and he taught there for 2 years. And so it was nice having money. However, as a professor, he was making about a third of the amount he was making as a computer salesman. And in the meantime, as we were not making any money to live on, we were charging literally everything. If we didn't have enough money for groceries, we would go out to eat so we could just charge the meal. And you don't eat at McDonald's or Burger King with a charge card. You go to Steak and Ale and other places and, you know, have a very nice meal, and then you charge it. If I needed shampoo or toothpaste, anything like that, I would go to TGNY, and I would just fill my buggy with whatever I needed and then charge it. And then we had all the things we needed. If the girls needed any clothes or shoes or one of my big things was, every fall, you know, I thought I had to take, or at the end of summer, I guess, before school started, I thought I had to take them shopping and buy them new clothes for school and a new coat and new shoes and all those things. And so I would charge everything. And because we had moved here from another state, the bank there had sent us a Visa card. Visa and MasterCard were just beginning then. And so I had two Visas. And, you know, if I reached the limit on one, I just go to the other one. And one day I went shopping. We had bought a new bedroom suit, which I had charged, and I needed a mattress in Box Springs. So I went to the store to charge it, and they called in, and they wouldn't take my charge. So I called Larry, because I was really upset, because, you know, I was used to getting whatever I wanted. And he called the credit company and just had our credit limit raised. So then, I think we had a $1,000 limit. He got it raised to $1,500, so then we could really go shopping and really run up these bills. For Christmas, no problem. You know, we just went out and bought whatever we thought the girls might want or we might want. And I have a couple of cartoons here that I found in the newspaper. One of them is Dennis the Menace, and you see Dennis in the front of the picture and his father in the background. And he's working at this desk, and Dennis is saying, my dad says Christmas isn't very merry anymore. And that's kind of how it is. If you go out and you charge all this stuff, you know, the next month or 2 months or 3 months, 5 months, however long it takes you to pay it off, you know, the kids have already broken the toys that you still haven't even paid for. So we just went on like this for quite some time. After he got this job. In fact, the job at OCU came in June. In July, we heard these principles that I'm sharing with you right now, the get rich quick, the co-signing, and other things I'll be sharing with you. And we heard a lot of other things at that time, but this is the one that God really impressed us that we had to take care of. And so at that time, in July of 1972, we purposed that we were going to get out of debt. And I don't know the exact figures on how much we owed, but it was pretty substantial. And I think now bankruptcy is more common than it was then, but sometimes I just like to read through the bankruptcies. And there are a lot of people that have filed bankruptcy for less than we owed. But, you know, we never considered that as an option. We just set about beginning to pay back. So here we were with a job, not making really enough to even meet our needs, because we still had the same house. You know, we still had the cars. I believe we might have paid for them by then. Our fixed expenses were basically the same, plus we had the three daughters. And then we had all these additional bills that we were going to try to begin to pay off. And on paper, it just doesn't compute. How we did it, I could not tell you, except that I believe God honored that. And it didn't come with one large amount. In about, I think, let's see, it was probably 1973, I had a real serious accident to my eye, and there was a settlement involved, and it was not as substantial as we had first thought, but, you know, we thought, well, this is what God is going to use to get us out of this mess, except that it wasn't enough to get us out of the mess that we were in. But we thought, what a price that would have been to pay just to have gotten us out of the mess that we were in. After we made this decision, you know, to get out of debt, my thoughts were, you know, how could I help? What could I do to help this situation? Because Larry was the one that was making the money. But, you know, it had to be a mutual decision. He couldn't say, okay, we've got to get out of debt on one hand, and me continue to charge and shop and do all of this stuff, because we would be fighting against each other. So I had to support the decision that he made. One of the first decisions he made was that we tear up our credit cards. And that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. I found this article in the Oklahoma City paper this summer, and this whole page deals with it, but it says, plastic turns to grips of steel for credit card addicts. And I can't honestly say that I was an addict, but I really depended on those credit cards. And I still remember the day we sat in the El Chico and Shepherd Mall and the last one went. That was so sad, because those credit cards were my security. I knew that if we didn't have any money, that I could always go and buy what we needed and charge it and worry about paying for it later. And I found out at the time I didn't do this too often, because I guess I was smart enough to realize that this would not be good. But they keep it under the counter, but at Skaggs they take credit cards. So if I got really desperate...
That's where I work.
Oh. I got really desperate. I knew that I could always run to Skaggs and get a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk or whatever we needed. But once the credit cards went, if we didn't have the money, we didn't buy it. And unlike what a lot of people think, you know, just because you have checks left, you can write a check. It doesn't quite work that way. We have the SCS cards now, you know, and you don't get money if you don't have any money in there. So you have to have the money. And, you know, another thing that God taught me, and I can't say that that I learned this all right then. This has been a gradual process. And, you know, it's still tempting sometimes to want to go out and buy something that you don't have the money for. But, you know, when you do that, you're taking away the provision that God may have for you. He may choose to provide it in a way you hadn't even thought of. And, you know, we have had just lots of things, trips, business trips that we've gotten that we couldn't have afforded to take in otherwise. We could have gone and charged them and bought all the things. But by God providing them in another way, you see what a blessing it is. And when we rush ahead of Him, you know, His timing is perfect. And what we may buy might not be anything that we should have at that time. And so we have to really trust God in this area. One of the things that I was looking at as I was preparing for this I had found an article that had a list of different items that if you charge them and you put them on your credit card, and I believe credit cards, the interest is about 18% a year or something like that. If you bought these items and paid it out over a year's period, it just had a list of a few things. If you bought a $30 pair of pants and paid it out, they would end up costing you $94.77. If you bought a $325 TV, it would cost you $1,026. If you bought $100 worth of groceries at Skaggs, they cost you $375. So, probably not by charging, we saved so much money because we were wasting the money that God had given us just by all the interest that we were paying. And you know, that one of the verses in Proverbs that talks about the borrower being servant to the lender, and that's what we were. The money wasn't ours. I mean, we had it, but we were their servant because we had to give the money that we got for us. And, you know, there's a great deal of freedom in getting some money and knowing that it's all yours. I mean, that you can spend it rather than having to knowing that it goes to something else. They had a figure on a house. If you bought a $90,000 house on a 30-year loan at 10% interest, that house would end up costing you $294,000. And 10% interest is probably maybe a little low for some of the rates today. That's 315.9% above the original cost. Cars, I got fascinated with this, so I got the Sunday paper out and started looking at the car ads. If you'll notice, most of the ads are given with a monthly payment rather than the full amount of the car, because they don't really expect anybody to pay cash for a car. Now that we have begun paying cash for cars, I mean, you're almost a second-class citizen. They do not want you to pay cash for a car. They want you to charge it because they lose money if you pay cash. And they have tried everything to talk you into signing. Honest and practical about it and just figure it out how much you really are making. Because when you get your check, you may think you have a lot of money, but when you break it down to what you're actually spending to work, it may not be that, you know, you may be working for $1 an hour or $2 an hour, and you can save more by staying home and shopping and baking and cooking and doing some of those other things. The other thing, you know, one more little side to the working is Matthew 6:24, which says you cannot serve two masters. You know, you're torn between your job and you're torn between your home. You may have to stay late at work, and you know your family needs you, and all kinds of situations may come up there. As I was reading Proverbs 31:10-31 one day about the virtuous woman and all that woman did, and, you know, I got to thinking about that as I meditated on it. It'd be really difficult to do all those things she did and be gone all day. I know just the time I've spent on preparation for this conference and being gone a lot. When I come home, I'm exhausted. You know, I don't care whether I eat, but I have other people there that do care. So, you know, you have to be prepared for them. So I'd just like for you to, you know, think about that, meditate on it. Another thing that I started during this period of time was making gifts, and I hope they weren't the kind of thing that people opened and said, oh no, what has she done this year? You know, am I going to have to know when she's coming so I can make sure I put it out? But, you know, I tried to make them things that were nice. When the collars became real popular, I started making those. One Christmas, I think I made about 3 dozen because I made a lot for gifts. I sold them. My husband likes to give some of the women at work Christmas presents, and, you know, try to make things that are nice. But you can just save so much money by doing little things like that. And again, if you're working, sometimes you don't have the time, or you wear yourself out doing it. we're not taking the time to turn to a lot of these verses, but one I would like to read is Titus 2, 3 through 5. And it's a passage you're probably familiar with, but it says, older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be dishonored. And I would just encourage you to meditate on that and all the things that it says about a woman. It has that one little phrase in there, you know, that you might meditate on about the workers at home. As I was preparing for this, you know, I've told you the story of the mess we got into and all the things that we did wrong. But I was trying to just think about, you know, what maybe are some of the keys to financial freedom? How do you accomplish this? And another, the man that my husband works for, and his wife and Larry and I were in New Mexico this summer on a business trip, and Kay and I were in a Christian bookstore looking at some books, and we began talking with the sales lady, and somehow cars came up, and we were talking. She needed a new car, and she couldn't afford one, and so I said something about this workshop, and she said, well, you know, how do you get financial freedom? And the first thing I thought of as I was talking with her was that I believe one of the keys to financial freedom is contentment. Just being content with what God has given you. 1 Timothy 6:6 says that godliness is great gain when accompanied by contentment. And one of the verses Larry had me memorize during this time was Hebrews 13:5. Which in the Living says, let your way of life be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. And then another verse on this is 2 Corinthians 10:12, which says, for we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with others, for those who measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves to themselves are without understanding. And, you know, you can always compare yourself to someone that has nicer clothes, a nicer house, a nicer car, all the things that you think you want or wish you had. But we rarely ever look the other way to the people that don't have as much as we have, that don't have it as good as we do. And that makes us so discontented when we compare ourselves to other people. And that, again, it's just the way we are as humans. We just look at other people and say, oh, I wish I had that. I wish I had that that they have. And in Philippians 2:14, it says, I will do all things without grumbling or complaining. And, you know, when we become discontented and when we compare to others, we tend to grumble and complain about our circumstances, our situation. In Proverbs, there are a lot of verses about the contentious woman. And when we're not content, we become contentious. And that just means quarrelsome or argumentative. And, you know, when you don't have what you want, you may quarrel a little with your husband, gripe, or whatever. The other day I saw this bumper sticker, and it says, when I'm depressed, I go shopping. And that kind of used to be my philosophy. And I didn't even have to be depressed. I just went anyway. But, you know, that's a real temporary relief. And most of the things we buy are just temporary. Another thing that I'd like to mention briefly is that it's very, very wise to train our children in this area of finances and train them from a very early age. We didn't know all these principles when we did this one particular thing, but when our girls were really small, we started doing this, and at the time they were getting 50 cents a week in an allowance. Not very much money, but we had three envelopes, one for each girl. In fact, actually, I think there were little jars that we kept it in. But we would give them their 50 cents in change so that they had at least two nickels. And after we gave it to them, we made them give us one nickel back, and we put it in the little jar, and that was their savings. And we went up and opened a savings account for them, and at each quarter, because it was such a small amount, we'd go up and deposit that little bit of money. And then when they got their statement, they could see the interest that it had drawn during that period of time. And then we made them take another nickel, and we brought their church envelope out, and they filled it out and got it ready for Sunday morning. So it taught them at an early age to begin to save and to begin to tithe and give God the portion of their allowance. And there's some verses in here on giving and saving and all that. The other day I was driving by this church near us, and it had up on the marquee, "What do your children learn by the life you live?" And you could apply this to any area of your life. But just in this area of finances, you know, what do your children learn from your life? Do they see you as angry and unhappy and discontented and frustrated, wanting more? Or do they see you as a happy, contented wife and mother, grateful to God for all that He has given you and the way He has abundantly blessed you? And, you know, this teaches them discipline, too, because they learn that just because they want something, they can't have it right then. They have to save till they do have enough money for it. In a verse I have on our hallway under our girls' pictures, I had a friend doing calligraphy some time ago, and it's 3 John 4, and it says, "I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth." And, you know, it's real exciting to see your children walking and doing the things that you've taught them. And our youngest daughter really needs a new car right now. I mean, she really does. But she's never even considered the option of going out and borrowing money to buy a car. I mean, it's just never occurred to her. Maybe it's occurred to her, but she doesn't talk about it. But, you know, what she does talk about is, "I need to get a job." She graduated from OU in May. She spent the summer in California, and now she's job hunting. But, you know, she talks about, "I need to get a job now so I can begin saving money for a car." And, you know, that's a real blessing for us to see in her life. One thing we were able to do about 4 years ago was we cashed in some money or savings that we had, and we paid the loan on our house off, and it was so exciting to have house payments. And, you know, we thought, well, this is really neat that we'll have this extra money. And so we started out, I think we did it for 3 months, putting the house payment money in a savings account. But, you know, pretty soon things happened and we started spending the money, and then we weren't quite so disciplined anymore. But it's real exciting to be able to do those things. And just like I said earlier, when you sit down with paper and pencil and figure all this, you just couldn't figure it. But somehow God has just really honored it and blessed us. And I'm not saying that we have everything we want and we do everything we want, but I believe we have everything that God wants us to have, and we do everything that God wants us to do. All right, the second key, I believe, with contentment is discipline. And Joshua 24:15 says, you know, "Choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And we just believe that this is what God has told us, and we have chosen to do this, and this is the way we're going to live. You know, we're created with our mind to think and to know, with our will to decide and choose, and with our emotions to feel and enjoy. And, you know, earlier when I told you about tearing up the credit cards, that was definitely an act of my will. It was not what I felt like or enjoyed doing. I did not want to do it. But I chose to do that, and eventually your emotions will catch up. I think on that one it took a few years, but they got there. And, you know, Elizabeth Elliot was talking the other night about Eve saying yes to self and no to God. And, you know, we're just like that. We have two belief systems that we're faced with: Satan's in the world or God's. And we have to choose which one we're going to go with. And, you know, one thing I was thinking about, do you think once she ate that fruit that brought her satisfaction? Probably not. Maybe temporary, but not a long-lasting satisfaction. And that's the way it is when we get some of the things that we think we have to have. They may bring a very temporary satisfaction or joy, but it's not long-lasting. Jeremiah 2:13 says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." The first thing they've done is they have forsaken God, who should be their real satisfaction. And then the second thing is they have dug their own cisterns, and these cisterns don't even hold water. And that's just seeking after the things that they want and the things that they think can satisfy them. Have you ever been tempted to think about this? If only, you know, if only I had a new car, then I would be happy. If only I had that dress, then I would be happy. If only I had the Dr. Suede dress, then I would have really been happy. You know, if only, if only, if only. The list could go on and on. If only my husband were different, then my situation would be different. If only my kids were grateful, obedient, then everything would be different. And, you know, where does real satisfaction begin? In the next thing you're going to buy? In the next thing you're going to accomplish or have? Psalm 16:11 says, "In thy presence is fullness of joy." And, you know, can you ever buy enough things to give you fullness of joy? I'm not going to take time to read it, but I have this little write-up that I had found, had it for years, and I had to dig it out the other day because I thought of it as I was thinking of things. But it says, "Well, Mr. and Mrs. Thing are a very successful and pleasant couple. At least that's the verdict of most people who tend to measure success with a thingometer. When the thingometer is put to work in the life of Mr. and Mrs. Thing, the result is startling. There he is, sitting down on a very luxurious and expensive thing, almost hidden by a large number of other things. Things to sit on and things to eat from, all shiny and new things, 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 things to clean with and things to wash and things to clean and wash and on and on and on." But, you know, sometimes I think we do, with our lives, get bogged down with things and they become our priority rather than the things that are really important. One, I didn't mention this a while ago when I was talking about the working mothers, but this was another article I found in the Oklahoma City paper this year, and it said, "Okay, working mothers, now's the time to simplify your lives." And it has all these really wonderful things to simplify your life. But the last one was my favorite. I mean, it's a very humanistic article if you read it. But the last one says, "Just say no. The PTA wants cookies for its bake sale. You used to either kill yourself," put my glasses on, so I'm reading, "baking or die of guilt if you bought or refused to participate. No more. To the PTA, you will just say no. To your childless friends who wants to have drinks to moan for the umpteenth time about her rotten boyfriend, you will just say no. You will not feel guilty. You will feel free. And you'll have the time and energy to say yes to more important things in your life, such as a bubble bath and a good book." Now, I thought that was... I mean, I enjoy a bubble bath and I enjoy a good book, but I wouldn't say they were the most important things in my life. But again, you know, that's just the way of the world. As one of the things that I was always asked to do, because I didn't work, was be a homeroom mother. And, you know, it was automatic. If they worked, they didn't, you know, it was expected that you didn't do anything. It was like if you didn't work outside the home, that all you did was sit around all day and watch TV and eat chocolate and have a wonderful time. But, you know, on the things, you know, we should be like Paul and say, "I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am in." I'm not going to take the time to look it up, but Philippians 4:11 through 13 and then verse 19, which says, "My God shall supply all your needs." And when we rush out ahead of God, we're not letting Him supply our needs. We're letting the world's way supply the needs that we have. One of the things it says in that verse is, "I've learned to live in humble means or in abundance." And I had a friend that used to say, "I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is better." I think we could probably all identify with that. I've never been rich, but I've had more at times than I've had at other times. And it's a lot more fun when you have more. But you learn a lot more when you don't have. And, you know, God would not have taught us all these things if we had just been given a large sum of money and gotten out overnight. But because we had to struggle and work at it, we learned so much. And, you know, I really can identify and empathize with it. Probably there are a lot of people that if they heard this say, I don't understand what she's talking about. But if I hear somebody that says, you know, we're really having a tough time, I can understand what they're going through. And again, just in closing, talking about Joshua 24:15, you know, the choose for yourselves. And for Larry and me, that just meant the choice of walking in the light of the truth that God had given us. And for us, that truth is, as Romans 13:8 says, that we are to owe no man anything. And we have taken that literally to mean owe no man anything in the financial area. And that is a choice that we have made. And as I said earlier, you know, it's tempting sometimes to want to go out and to buy a new car. And as Marilyn said earlier, you know, we had a daughter get married in March, and we're having a daughter getting married in December. And I found out in March that weddings are not as simple as it was for us. I mean, I thought I had a big wedding, but I don't remember all the detail we did that is involved now. But, you know, it's exciting to know that we can do this and not be really overburdened because we have planned ahead for these things. One verse that I found about a year ago that has meant so much to me, it's Psalms 22:5, and it says, to thee they cried out and were delivered. In thee they trusted and were not disappointed. And, you know, God did deliver us. He didn't deliver us the way we wanted him to, and he didn't deliver us the way I would have chosen for him to do it. But he delivered us in the way that was best for us. And we weren't disappointed. There were times, you know, I can't say I sailed through all of this and had a wonderful attitude and never griped or complained. But we weren't disappointed. He saw us through it all. Two more verses. 1 Timothy 4:7 says, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. And in this area of finances, it's just a discipline that we have to choose to do. And then Galatians 5:22 and 23 talks about the fruit of the Spirit, and one of those is self-control. And I think this is an area where we really do have to use self-control. But again, you know, these are choices that we make, and they're an act of our will. We have to decide what our priorities are going to be. And once you make that priority, the rest of the decisions are easier. If you decide, I'm not going to buy unless I don't have the money, then, I mean, it may not be easy, but you know what is right, and so you do it. And you go on from there. And then God will reveal something else to you, and you start learning that too. And so we just have to decide. And that is what, as I've given you this one worksheet and some of these verses, that as Acts 2:42 says, I would encourage you to search the scriptures and just see what God is telling you to do. And then once you know that, to live in accordance with it, choose to stand on the promises of his word.